I want to start out with a little story. A young development worker from the government went to talk with a man to do a survey in an African village. And he asked him, "Does your wife work?" And the man replied, "Oh no, I wouldn't let her work." And the development worker said, "Well, what does she do all day?" And the man says, "Well, she gets up about 5 a.m. every morning, and she pounds grain for about an hour. And then she, of course, has to light the fire and cook the breakfast for all the rest of us. And about 7 a.m., the kids have to get up. Some of them have to get, she has to get them ready for school if they're fortunate enough to go to school. She goes to the well to draw water. The well's about a half mile away, and she needs to make about 3 trips every morning and every evening. So by the time she gets done with that, I don't know, it's probably 10 a.m. already. And then she bathes the baby and takes the baby with to the fields where she works till about 3 p.m. And then, of course, she has to gather wood to cook with, and she probably gets home about 4. Well, then she has to go to the well again for about 3 more trips, and then, of course, she has to eat supper so that we can eat. And the development worker said, "I thought you said she doesn't work." And the man said, "I told you, she doesn't." So that is reality, I'm sorry to say, for most women in Africa. I think a lot of the things I say might sound familiar to women in America. A lot of the same struggles that we have here, you'll find that African women have too. But I think because they're poorer, they're exacerbated. But I hope that you can think of the African women not as people far away with life problems completely different than our own, but as people, women just like us, that are struggling to survive in this world. So I'm going to show a few slides first, not too many, and then we'll have a lot more time to talk. These are the typical scenes of women in Africa. Rarely do we see them just sitting and looking beautiful. Women in Africa are strong, and they do a huge variety of work. Going to the fields, obviously, selling in the markets, and a few, and more certainly as the years go by, are able to work in offices.
But what country is this?
These are all from Senegal, where I was. I'm sorry, Senegal in West Africa. The prime tasks for women, those tasks that eat away all their free time, that are sort of mindless tasks but take forever and are also backbreaking tasks, are fetching wood and fetching water.
The big thing on her head in the field, is that water?
The first one? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was sorghum. I'm sorry, I didn't point it out very well. She was harvesting a field of sorghum.
They find carrying on their head the easiest way, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Not that it's easy. Try it sometime. It's never easy. I think some. One of these basins, I measured once, and it takes about 28 liters. So that's roughly, what's close to 60 pounds that one of these weigh. And they would make many trips, not just a few.
Now, is she going to put that green one on her head?
Yeah, but she'll probably need help from somebody to actually get it up onto her head, except it's not quite full, so she might be able to get it up, but then she carries it that way. Water is a backbreaking task, and it's not interesting. I think that's the main thing. There's really no way to improve it. It doesn't improve yourself as you do this work in any way. It's not fulfilling, but it needs to be done, so African women are the ones that do it.
The U.S. Army was doing some studies. They thought that maybe carrying on your head was more efficient than carrying on your back, so they were doing studies to see whether they should redo the way in which soldiers carry their backpacks.
Soldiers would never go carry
them on their. I think they decided it was more, you could actually carry more weight more efficiently, but that you're not just carrying, well, not just water, because water sloshes around. I mean, water's hard to carry.
Yes.
But I mean, they felt that the kinds of things that soldiers carry don't work well on your head. And it was real hard to get soldiers to think about carrying a backpack on their head.
That's very interesting. Of course, as you point out, it does slosh around. And that's why you or I would have a great deal of trouble, not just the weight. These women walk like queens. You know, it's like they've all been to charm school.
Yeah.
Yes, and they walk very state, you know, very stately.
That's the sort of place you grow water from?
In one situation. This would not be typical, thank goodness. This is much more typical of the women that I worked with. They're traditionally herding people, and they live a long ways apart. And so they come to a central well where a well has been drilled. This particular one is nearly 1,000 feet deep. And there's a pump on it. It rises, it's semi-artesian. So it rises up to a height of just over 100 feet deep. And there's a pump on it, but the pump often breaks down. But anyway, if the pump breaks down, they have a well, so they can pull it out of that. So what they're doing here is transporting water back to their village, which could be as much as 5 miles away. Fortunately, they don't have to do that on their head. They have donkeys. Donkeys, these wonderful animals that work in so many ways. Many of the fortunate ones have carts, donkey carts. And you see what they use for transportation? Can you see what that is?
Where?
And, down on the bottom, what they're putting the water into. It's pretty broken up and repaired, so you might not be able to see. It's simply a truck inner tube. And they find nowadays that that's the most efficient and easily repairable and easily accessible container for water. So everybody has inner tubes. These women really impressed me one day because it was only women getting the water, and they have this hydraulic system of, they fill up their basins from the well and then siphon it down into the inner tube with this hose system. But the amazing thing was when they were going to get these inner tubes, often filled with up to 200 liters, which weighs 440 pounds, onto the backs of the poor donkeys.
They carry them?
And they did it. The donkeys manage. They may not fill it quite that full. I'm not sure how many liters they figure they can put on the back of these donkeys. I guess not. I was kind of surprised by that. The donkey doesn't want to sit there doing all this. It takes a long time to get it full. If there's a cart, they would fill it up on the cart. But these are the kind of tasks that fill African women's days. When they go home, they would usually go to a home like this. This is a typical, also, Fulbe woman, semi-nomadic. She lives in a grass house. I'll just point out, she's got, you can see it, look on all the women I show you, and about half of them have it, a dark tattoo with indigo dye around her mouth. And it's a very painful process, but it's considered to be a great mark of beauty. So they go through that at the age of about 15. Women, of course, when they finish those backbreaking tasks of wood and water, have more mundane tasks that we know here, bathing the children. They're very good about bathing our children every day, for the most part. And of course, they have to watch over their children. I thought this was a creative solution to what to do with your baby. Well, this woman was pounding grain. Food preparation is totally in the hands of the women. Of course, food growing is partially, but the preparation is totally. So this woman has taken the millet that she grew together with her husband in fields and probably taken it to the local mill to grind it, since she has such a large quantity. It's often pounded at home, but this is millet flour ready to use, but always carried on their heads.
Men are working in the fields?
Somewhat, in my area. In other areas, they're working very little. So that was a Muslim influence.
Really?
They work a little bit more in Senegal, where I was. Food preparation takes a very long time because you're really starting with basic ingredients. The fish have to be cleaned from getting their insides out. She's right now scraping the scales off. It's really preparation from the bottom up. And this woman is preparing in a typical kitchen, usually outside in my area, which is nice so that the rooms are not so smoky as in many other areas. But the women themselves who are cooking, of course, are breathing in smoke all the time. And it's also a danger that children, they have to watch their children carefully. They have nothing to do but watch them while they're cooking, but children will often fall in the fire. There are a lot of accidents with burns of children. After she's done cooking, the woman may cross over the river. This is the village where I lived in June. to the market. Yeah, I love this slide because it shows that people don't follow the rules of boating that we all learned when we were growing up, which is never stand up in the boat. Many, many women sell in the market, especially produce that they've grown themselves in their own gardens, but many others, wanting to earn a little money, would buy in bulk from merchants that come through town and sell, when you say retail, they break it up, they'd sell one carrot, for example, or one sweet potato, because that's what most people are able to buy each day. They don't want to buy in bulk. So that's a very common task of women. The work in the fields is split, but never, never think that the men are the farmers and the women are doing the domestic chores. In Africa, women are the farmers. In Senegal, where I am, the women help, especially at planting and harvest time, and are not so responsible for weeding. But in Zaire, for example, where I was before, and in most of Black Africa, women do the bulk of the field preparation, the planting, the weeding all the way along, and the harvest. This woman is harvesting millet. You cut off the whole stalk. It's related to corn, so this is sort of the equivalent of the cob, but of course it's very long and narrow. And millet is a tiny grain that we especially use in birdseed here, if you've seen it. And that's what's pounded into flour. And of course we eat it at Holden Village too. I just forgot that.
Did we have millet yesterday?
Yes, we did. It's a wonderful grain, very helpful. And it's the staple in Senegal, so it's really fun for me to come here and see that some Americans are using it.
What do they do with the cob?
In nothing.
They don't till it back into the ground?
No.
They can't burn it?
They might give it to the animals. I wonder if the animals can eat that. Basically, anything that's left over from food in an area like that where animals are really the backbone of the economic system is fed to animals. Mm-hmm. That's why there's no composting or everything, because anything goes to the animals.
What's that mound there in the back?
That's her house, one of her houses. She's going into her actual one right here. That would be another relative's. They're on a large compound, as people always live. It's the extended family. One man with all his wives, each wife would have one, and then each son would have a house, all in the same compound.
Is that a vehicle behind her?
Yeah.
That's my
car.
Okay.
I was here, you see, taking the picture. The women here, I'm really sorry I don't have a picture of milking, because another of their major tasks is milking. What she's carrying here is milk. And it's left to turn into yogurt in these wooden bowls. And then that's the staple, the traditional staple of the diet, and always what is given as hospitality. It's sort of something like yogurt mixed with a little water and sugar, and it makes a really refreshing drink. And anytime you go anywhere, you'll be given milk in the Fulbe culture, like this.
What about tea beans?
Well, you have to decide whether you're going to drink it, but you'll always be given it. That was a very tough question. Very tough question.
Now, what kind of cows are these in Africa?
Well, wonderful cows. I don't think in this slideshow I have any pictures of the cows, but they're Zebu cows. They have a big hump and they have long horns. And the cows that are prized by these people are white, but they are sometimes brown too. So this is typically when I'm out with women, this is how we sit around drinking milk and discussing.
I noticed a painted toenail. Is that common?
You did? Did anyone else notice a painted toenail? Could I? Yes, that is. As it is modern. The traditional way of beautifying yourself is with henna. If anyone knows what henna is, we use it for our hair, to turn our hair red. They would put it on their feet and their hands in beautiful patterns. Women around the world?
What's the average height of a man?
It varies so much around. It varies probably more than Europeans, and you can't say what's the average height of a European. Where I was, they were tall for the most part, but of course they go from some of the shortest people in the world to some of the tallest people in the world. But where I was, they were tall and thin.
What's their life expectancy?
I think it's about 50 mm-hmm. in Senegal.
Well, basically, what were you doing with them?
Well, I'll get to that.
Okay.
A few other tasks the women have, I just want to show you the huge variety. Besides those daily grinding tasks, wood and water, there are other things that come up now and then. She's making the milk into butter, and so she's shaking it. Rather than a churn, she'll just shake it. It's in a goat skin, and she shakes and shakes and shakes until it's separated. And of course, the butter is liquid, I think simply because it's so hot there, and that's the form that they use it in. It's a very special oil.
Is there refrigeration now?
Not much.
Just they do heat up for spoils?
Right. That's what you do. And that's what people have done all the way along. So how do people, these women are strong women. They're faced with a daunting amount of work. And now I want to talk a little bit about how they're dealing with it and how their lives are changing in the 1980s and as we go into the 1990s. Oh, I'm sorry. A few more pictures of their tasks. Sometimes they have to build houses. This is the grass house, as you saw in the other picture, that's being built by a woman. Sorry, a few more pictures of these first. This woman, his name is Ndakaru Dem. And she was one of my good friends for all the 5 years that I lived in Njum, Senegal. And she's had kind of a difficult life. She's very, very intelligent. Anyone that meets her is struck by how bright she is. But she was taken out of school in fourth grade because her aunt, with whom she was living, got an eye infection. And of course, she was the person that was, of all the children that were in school, she was the one that was taken out to do all the daily work because the aunt, the head of the family, was sick for so long. So she's never gone further than fourth grade, but she speaks French more than any of the other kids in that family. She's very bright. She really likes to speak French. She was married off the year I got there to a cousin, which is very typical, a cousin that she detested. So they managed to stay together, and that's a baby with that cousin, for about a year, and then they got divorced.
Oh, so they do divorce.
Very commonly. Uh-huh. She was not disappointed at all. As a matter of fact, many of the most dynamic women prefer to be divorced. They say, it's the only way to be, Jane. This... If you can't be single in our culture, so I mean there we are, the never married are impossible. So that cannot exist in that culture. You will simply be married to somebody. Your family will make sure that you're married. But as long as you're married, you're not free. Your husband can tell you what to do at any minute, and you're not free to go into the village to see your friends or anything like that without asking your husband. But if you're divorced, you are. So she was happy being divorced.
Can a woman choose divorce, or can only the man?
It's very difficult for a woman. It's possible, but I know women who have been deserted by their husbands for 10 years and still have not been able to get a divorce through, even on the grounds of desertion, something like that. They've never seen their husband in the last 10 years. It's very difficult if the husband, or at least the husband's family, doesn't accept it. There's no grounds on which the women can go. But of course, you may know in Islamic culture, for a man to divorce his wife, he simply has to say, I divorce you, 3 times, and then they're divorced. Mm-hmm. Just as I left, she got married, this beautiful, bright young woman, as the second wife to a man of about 50. She was happy. I was amazed. So that's just a typical story. She said it's a rich man, and she thinks she'll be happy with him. She thinks that she'll have enough freedom, and certainly she'll have enough money, and that's...
How old was she when she was married the first time?
She was older than most. She was probably 21, something like that, which is much older than most. Some of the other women I know, and I'm sorry I'm in so many of these pictures. These are the ones that people send me, and hardly any of these are taken by me. So people send me the pictures, so I'm in them. I wanted to tell you about this woman, the one on my right. Well, I can't even see. But anyway, the one in the white boo-boo on my right. She has epilepsy, which was discovered just after she got married at the age of 15. Her name is Aisata. And when her first attack of epilepsy came on after her marriage, people, of course, were convinced that it was an evil spirit and tried with a lot of Islamic teachers to cure her of it, and it didn't seem to be working. She also has tried Western medicine, and I'm not enough of a medical person to know why it's not possible to control it, given the proper doses of medicine that we found for epilepsy. But because of that, her husband divorced her. She says that he wanted to stay with her, but the family wouldn't accept her. They wanted to be sure that she didn't have any children with that husband. So she's back in her home village, a really poor village, one of the poorest that I know, with absolutely no prospects for a future. she doesn't have anyone then supporting her, and she is going to have a tough life. A young, wonderful woman. And this woman, Jo, is one of the women that I've known the longest. She is the feminist woman of a village called Larrabe. And I told a little bit the other day about how when the women of Larrabe wanted to start a garden, they would not consider building it next to the men's field where they could use water from the men's pump with a lot less work than carrying the water up themselves. She was the one that said, absolutely, we're not going to consider being dependent on those men. We'll carry up the water ourselves, but absolutely, if the men have control over the water, they have control over our lives, and we don't want any of that. We're old, we don't need men. She always talks about that. We don't know where her husband went, but she is a strong woman. She said, I don't need men. They have. So there's a great variety of women. And this one, I'm told you can't see very very clearly, but she has a black piece of cloth over her face. And this also was taken very shortly before I left. I was surprised because this is a girl I had known for years. She is, I believe, 13 years old, and she was just married. The black veil means that she was married. So she'll leave that black veil on for maybe a month or two. It's not a really oppressive thing. It used to be a year, but now I guess nobody leaves it on a year anymore. But she was married to a man of about 30. She's fortunate enough to be his first wife, so she's very happy about that. But obviously scared to death of all the responsibilities that go with marriage. Fortunately also, she's staying in her own village. But that was a big wedding I went to shortly before I left. This woman too, Mariama, this woman in the blue on the left, is another president of one of the garden groups. Her husband died a long time ago, and she lives with her daughters. And a couple years ago, the main daughter, the one is partially blind, but the healthy one ran off with a man who came to town and somehow charmed her. She's sure that he put a spell on her. Anyway, they ran off to Mauritania, stealing all her jewelry along the way before they left. With the refugee crisis, the political crisis that came up last year, the daughter finally came back, but of course they had used all the jewelry. So she was really depressed, first of all by the loss of her daughter, and then by the loss of all her wealth, because women of course store their wealth, their bank savings, in their jewelry. Okay, now I'm going to talk a little about how women are dealing with the changes today. The main one is through associating themselves. Women's groups are very active in my area. It's a wonderful thing about being there. The cause of it, I have no idea. I don't think it's influences from the outside, but it hasn't always been that way. It's a new phenomenon, but all the villages are doing it. They're getting together and forming women's associations. The main purpose of these women's associations is to share credit or to be sort of insurance at a crisis time, for example, at the death of a husband or something like that. Women pay regularly. That's the mainstay of their meetings. They don't have long agendas. They just go through the list. Each person has to pay, for example, 30 cents a month. That's a typical sum, 100 francs. And they all put it into this common fund, and they get somebody, some man usually, because hardly any women can write, to write it all down in a notebook. And then that money is available for loans, usually at a high interest, to other women in their group, or to give to people who have an event where they, usually entertainment, the birth of a child, or at a death, people are faced with a lot of costs. When I started working with these women, I worked totally with the village groups that were already there, which made my work a million times easier and also, of course, much more successful, because the women were already committed to each other. Didn't mean that they didn't have problems, and there were a lot of groups that became dysfunctional at various times through my 5 years there. In one group, the president of the women died, and so as not to make her husband sadder than he already was, they didn't want to elect a new one. So it went about a year and a half with the group sort of unable to function because there was no president. But at any rate, I worked with these women. And of course what we did, as I talked about the other day, is especially gardening. The main purpose of gardening, if I talk about the liberation of women, which is what I was thinking of calling this session, is for them to have disposable funds of their own. Of course they eat a lot of it, and it helps their family's nutrition. But what they're especially interested in, so what I became especially interested in, is having their own money. This is not the same across Africa by any means. In many countries, women and men's money goes together and the man controls it all. That would be more typical. But in Senegal, it was wonderful. The women, if they earned their own money, they could keep their own money. Their own inheritance had always been separate, and what they earned was their own. So whatever they could earn through these gardens was their disposable income. And they were able to buy clothes for themselves, they were able to visit a relative if they want, and they were able to take care of their children when the husband, with his money, did not do so. So it was really up to them. Young girls have many of the same responsibilities as women. Very few of them would be able to go to school, so these girls are helping in the garden. Notice the boys are also playing, but I much more rarely saw them doing any useful work. But they come along to the garden. In one of these gardens, again, in many of the gardens, women are starting to get pumps. And that's what people who work in women in development are calling for. Give the means of production to women. And almost everyone that worked in development in my area was seeing that too. If you want a project to work, work with the women. It seems like with how little the men do, you often want to work with the men because it gives them something to do. But in general, the pumps are not kept up. The gardens are not well cared for. But the pumps that are given to women continue to run for the most part, especially if women are trained in their maintenance and management. Women are planting trees, and some of the most exciting stories I read of across Africa are how women are planting trees. This, differently than gardening, does not bring them income. But as I told you, women are responsible for wood, and they know how far they have to go at present to look for wood. Many times it's many miles each direction to look for wood. So they're beginning to plant trees.
What kind of trees do they plant?
Whatever works in the area. In my area, what seemed to be working best was the mesquite tree from the southwestern United States, simply because it's very fast growing. The local acacias we're trying to protect. They don't do very well in planting, but we're trying more and more to protect the local trees and plant a few other fast growing trees. Another way that women really can change their lives is through improved health care and family planning. Sushi Engelbrecht here is working with women, especially because it's women that are going to stay around the village. The ideal village health worker, somebody who will be in the village, is a married woman. If you train a man, and often the village is given the choice, will choose a man, first of all, to be trained in health care. But the man will usually leave. Men are very mobile. Even if not for extended periods of time, he'll certainly leave sometimes. But women, married women, as I said, are trapped in their village. They have very little freedom to go anywhere. So it's good for health workers if you want your health worker to always be in the village. So she's training them. And of course, women's lives are the most affected by the new child survival programs that are going on all over the world. Children are being vaccinated, and children's health care is being improved in many ways, maternal and child nutrition, so that fewer children die, which is, in a sense, a liberation for women.
Is that a UN program?
It can be anything. Many of the governments sponsor them. The U.S. government certainly does, and many of the missions have similar programs. All working through the local government for the most part, because it's a local government. But ours was heavily funded by UNICEF. So that gives you a brief overview of the struggles that some of the women in Senegal, where I worked, are facing. What most of them are hoping for, most of the village women, is a secure life with freedom to escape from an oppressive marriage, for example, if they have it, enough funds to decide themselves what they're going to buy, healthy children, and that's what we hope for young girls like this. Senegalese women are very strong. I admire them. I just can't tell you about enough of them, how many problems they have, how strong they are, and
how they manage to find solutions to all these problems that face them. Okay, that's the slide. Spin, if you want to open the curtains behind you, go ahead.
Is it true that birth control is a no-no because they love to have babies? I read that someplace.
Well, that would be much too much of an overstatement. I would certainly not say that's true as such. Some people do, some don't.
Do they practice birth control?
Some do, some don't. Mm-hmm. In my area, it's coming. And it's certainly a very important question. It's certainly very important for the liberation of women, for them to make their own choices, is when they can decide when to have children. All across Africa, women are the farmers. Women have been doing the agricultural production since time immemorial. Men traditionally did hunting, but there is very little hunting left to do. So the farmers are, for the most part, women. Now, when people, governments, the UN, missions, whoever, started working in development, they wanted to help people improve agriculture through access to credits, access to modern inputs, knowledge about modern agricultural practices, and certainly a market, especially for cash crops that are to sell. Most of them came, and most farmers in Europe and the United States are men. So I think that's how they carried over the idea that farmers are men. And you can still read in development literature, but especially what was written a few years ago about farmers and their wives. Farmers and their wives does not make any sense in Africa as a term. Farmers, for the most part, are women. So the result is that cultures in which already women were burdened by a larger share of the work, men were the ones given access to credit, encouraged to grow cash crops, which of course brought money that the men had as disposable income. Also, there were some tractor programs where larger fields were plowed. That enabled the family to have a larger field, which is good. But of course, it increased the burden on women who had to weed the field during the entire season and were mainly responsible for harvest. And now what is a typical situation is that there's a woman's field, which is for the family. Everything that she grows is eaten by the family. And there's a man's field, which is a cash crop. Peanuts in my area. In other places, it could be non-food crops from cotton to coffee, tea, whatever else you've heard of that's grown for cash in Africa. There's a great variety of different agricultural products. And as we know across the world, when women have money, they usually use it to buy things, necessities for the children. And if men have money, they usually buy things for themselves. Sorry to make too many generalizations. Of course, it's not true everywhere. But bicycles are things that that men often buy, which women certainly do not use. And of course, alcohol and other things like that are the most regrettable uses of cash crop income when it's totally under the control of men. The example closest to me is the rice fields. As you could see, I live on a large river. I live kind of in a desert along a large river. So what does that suggest to everybody? Of course, irrigation. And it's very important there. Unlike irrigation in the US, where you can question the validity totally, I think that irrigation in an area like that is the future. There's so little rain, no one will ever have food security until there's good irrigation. But the big projects with plenty of capital to spend also had that idea. We're going to work with the farmers, the men. Or possibly they went into a village and asked the authorities who they should work with. And the men, of course, in authority said that, you know, the fields will be ours. And so an immense amount of money has been spent. The current investment costs of rice fields in my area, which are done very high tech because they're feeling right now that they may as well do it well from the beginning. The most recent one was done with laser leveling and concrete lined canals, costing about 5 million francs a hectare, which is about $15,000 per hectare. So that's what, if I can do it roughly, $7,000 an acre of land preparation cost. So if you have a piece of land that's given to you, the government, with an investment of $7,000 an acre on it, that's power. You have economic power. So it matters a lot who gets that land. And traditionally those fields belong to, each family gets one, so of course it's in the name of the man. And that's what women were constantly saying to me. Yes, they have responsibilities to work on the family's rice fields, which of course are their husband's fields, but they needed their own fields that were in their name, that no one could take away from them, that even if they were divorced or their husband left, that they had full power over those fields. It's not an uncommon thing. We really have woken up to this in the last few years. A bill went through Congress, I think, more than 10 years ago, that all development projects need to have an assessment of the impact on women. There's a Women in Development office in Washington that is part of AID. And Dick is smiling because, of course, Bread for the World worked on it. How long ago was it?
Well, again, last year, we lobbied on the Women in Development Bill of 1989 for funding for the Women in Development Office for disaggregation of data. A lot of times when USAID gathers data, the third world countries, it's cumulative data that includes men and women. And so we were trying to get them to insist on disaggregating it so they can see the separate effects on women of various programs and hunger and poverty and various levels and stuff like that. Yeah, we wrote the child survival legislation. We helped write it. We were the primary grassroots lobby group on child survival in 75 or 6. And also then on women in development, because most Americans don't pay any attention to that stuff. So it's very, very important stuff. And we were trying to get funding for UNIFEM and NSTRA. I don't know if you United Nations, whatever it is, Office on Women and stuff like that. But trying to insist that all AID programs have as one of their criteria, how does this program affect women at the level because that's just so crucial. It's all in all the labor.
So thank you. AID is under pressure to work for women. So it's good that the pressure stay on them. Of course, I never worked for AID, but it's governments like that that do so overwhelmingly more than us little people in our little projects. It's very important that they work to the benefit of women.
Who did you work for?
The Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.
Oh, you did.
What about United Church Women? They've always had Africa and the Singing Wells and improving agriculture as one of their projects.
Good. I don't know what organization they work through in Africa.
I suppose the Council of Churches. National Council of Churches. United Church.
World Council.
Church World Service, then.
Church World
They're
Service.
They're very active. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And any of these private organizations, too, are very much aware of these issues. Tom Stein was just saying that the organization he works most closely with, World Concern, has a specialist in women in development. So, thank goodness this issue is coming up. But I want to talk a little more about some of the other obstacles that women face and how things look for them now.
Well, one of the ways Senegal that you have... Is Senegal a republic or a democracy?
It's a democracy. One of the ways we have access to power... I'm sorry?
Do women have the vote?
Yes. Access to power. They're having the vote in Senegal. It's one of the few countries where women can vote, but I'm sorry to say it's one of the few countries in Africa where anyone votes. So I don't know if there are some countries where only men can vote. Very few democracies in Africa. Education is one way to get power. I mean, having what you want is your own source of money, so that especially, it came up so many times to me, women in oppressive marriages where they were being beaten or abused in a number of ways, they can't get out if they don't have some means of supporting themselves. Now, does that sound familiar at all to you?
Mm-hmm.
It's not only a problem in Africa, but it just seems more and more crucial to me that the power that women need is economic power. So education is one main way of getting it. Education in Senegal is free and it's open to anyone. And a lot of girls start out the first year of elementary school. It's about 50% girls, 50% boys in those first years. Now, what kind of subtle discrimination there is in the educational system, I can't really say. But one thing I know is that the boys come home and they study and then they play. The girls come home from school, they have to go to the well a couple times, pound grain for maybe an hour, and then if there's any time left, they might be able to study. By the time you get to the upper grades, there's very, very small proportion of girls. And that's why women cannot get further. It's not the educational system, but it's what they have to do at home. There's also a lot of sexual abuse of schoolgirls that I always hear about from teachers. And I think that creates a lot of other problems. Schoolgirls are under a lot of pressure. The few that manage to finish school can often find work, but then they have to deal with a whole different set of issues. How to combine childbearing with their work. Senegal has a very progressive labor law for the few that are lucky enough to be working in jobs in the formal sector, that is, jobs covered by that labor law, where they're working for a salary, they pay taxes, etc. Then they're covered by these laws, which give them 3 month maternity leave, 6 weeks before and 6 weeks after paid. It's more like a European system. That's absolute. And nobody loses their job through having children, through taking long maternity leaves. So that at least is good. But even after that time, of course, you have the problems of breastfeeding your children and simply caring for your children while you're working all the time. And one woman I especially think of as a wonder in this sense is named Mariam Sow. And she went partly through school, and then she did a course on community development. It's called Animation for Women. So she's worked in a number of villages. She has 8 children. She's very happy because her 8th child now is a daughter. So finally, after all those 7 sons, which are not able to help their mothers very much, or don't in that culture, now she has a daughter. So now she says, I'm done. That's enough. And knowing her strong will, I'm sure she will take steps so that will be enough. She's managed through the years, she's nearly 40, to juggle her career, her children, and then she works voluntarily in her home village, which is why I know her, because I worked in a more formal way in her home village, which she introduced me to, all the people. Recently, her husband took a second wife, to her great disappointment, because she somehow thought he wouldn't, but this is very common, and women cannot do anything about it. The Senegalese law now is such that at marriage, you sign for either polygamy or monogamy. This is a reform in the law. And this reform is hotly contested by the Islamic fundamentalists. So it's not sure that this law will be able to stay in. But Senegal, with its secular democracy, really one of the best governments in Africa, has this reasonably progressive family law, which allows the possibility at marriage of, if you sign monogamy, then the husband can never marry another wife, unless, of course, you're divorced. So it's like us. But you ask, why aren't all marriages that way? It's because the husband doesn't accept. And very few women have the luxury of demanding of their husband that they sign for monogamy. It's a very small, very, very small proportion that sign as monogamy. Most men I talk to, even young, westernized, very well educated, have many Western values, say, of course I'm only going to have one wife, but I'm just signing polygamy just because you never know. You know, you never know the future, so as to leave all your options open, you take polygamy. And a very moving book, if any of you are interested in African literature, is called So Long a Letter. It's by Mariam Ba. And I can't recommend another novel that you learn more about Senegalese culture or that I enjoyed more. It's about 2 very well-educated Senegalese women, both of whose husbands took second wives. And one was definite, you take a second wife, I'm leaving. And she got out of there and struggled. And the other one just felt she couldn't. She didn't have an option of leaving her husband as much as she wanted to. So this is a very common problem.
Say that again.
Mariam Ba.
Is she
it's available like in the African Writers series. It's not, you know, in typical, but if you search for it, your bookstore can find it.
In the bookstore here?
No. I forgot. I didn't think about it until today that would have been a wonderful, I think people really could enjoy it. It's not a technical book. It's a fun book. It's a novel.
Mariama?
Mariama. M-A-R-I-A-M-A.
But it's not a book we're about to find in our library at home.
It would take a big library, but any bookstore could order it for you. It's a paperback. I think it costs about $5.
Yeah.
paperback, so it's not expensive if you can get it that way. Mariama has been really a mentor to me. We've gone together to many women's meetings. She's never afraid to yell and scream at them when they do crazy things, and certainly women's groups do. It was this village organization that worked together where they were paralyzed for a year and a half because they refused to elect a new president. She's not afraid to say to them that the reason they're not doing the garden as well as they could is because they're in a power struggle between them, which they are, different factions, different clans want to get their person into power. A lot of power struggles, as we always do in every association. And it's often very difficult for somebody from the outside to see. And she always told me, Mariama, not to be discouraged. If development were easy, it would already be done. Mm-hmm. And so to keep working and to keep having faith in women and encouraging the women to have faith in themselves, because they knew that they failed a lot. Things did not go well all the time. They had a very difficult time paying for the fuel for their pump, for example. They had a difficult time getting a fence up because some of the women did not come the day that it was set that everybody had to bring 5 sticks to put into the fence. You know, what do you do? What's your discipline for the women who don't come? And how, you can't make a fence unless everybody makes the fence together. A lot of failures, but they keep working. A really important thing, as we started to talk about, for women's changing roles is family planning. And there it's very hard to make any generalizations. In general, all across Africa, what family planning people talk about is not limiting the number of children, never limiting the number of children, because there you're interfering with God's work, with Allah's work, as the Muslims would say. It's God who gives us children, and we would never say that we want fewer than God is giving us. But the way they speak of it is as a health measure for the good of the women, space your children further. Now, of course, this comes out in the end that you have fewer children if they're spaced 3 years apart, which is what it's being encouraged to do. Some Islamic teachers are against this, but many are willing to write things like, the Quran says that we are to care for the health of the woman. And since medical knowledge tells us that women are healthier and babies are healthier if the babies are further apart, then it's morally ethical to use family planning. Others, of course, say that it's not. The Catholic Church is very widespread in Africa also. About 5 to 10% of people in Senegal were Catholic, so, and we know what they say about it. And Protestants, for the most part, would encourage it. And those are the, you know, three main religious groups in Africa. Culturally, of course, large families were important back in the agricultural days when there was enough land. So people do have in their traditional values. Also, ethnic groups are very important to people, and it was seen as your responsibility to your ethnic group. And we know that Africans do not live for fulfillment as an individual, but how you can help your ethnic group. Your responsibility was to make it bigger, to have a lot of children. So it was a social pressure thing. But I think that's really, really changing. Urbanization changes a lot. And simply a worldview of seeing a few models, now that there are many African families of 2 or 3 children, where the children are better dressed and probably healthier, people see that and are impressed by that, and people want to follow that model. Probably more women than men are interested in family planning. And so it's a hard thing in family planning programs to know whether to work just with the women who are more interested but might face great resistance from their husband, or to work with the whole family. So solutions are still being sought for. One of the most important organizations, at least in Senegal, but I think around the world, is the International Planned Parenthood Federation. They had the Senegalese branch of that, which belongs to it, is called the Senegalese Association for Family Well-Being. And they work in maternal health in general, women's health clinics in general, because that's what's going to promote family planning. Women's health has improved, children's health has improved, and women, of course, have more hope that the children they have will grow up. Women need access to family planning. It's one of the most desperate needs, And if there's anything we can do, I think that that's something we should do. Support organizations that are promoting family spacing. It's not usually called family planning, it's family spacing. But we have a long ways to go. In Nigeria, for example, a survey recently found that fewer than 1/5 of Nigerian women have ever heard of a single modern method of birth control. I don't have statistics for Senegal, but I think that it's probably similar. It's not something that's become well known yet by any means. So in order for women to have choices over their own lives, that's obviously an important thing that needs to be made available to them, to those who want it.
Jane, what is the situation with abortions?
With the what?
Abortions.
It's illegal in Senegal. We certainly heard, I really heard third, fourth hand of, you know, illegal, very dangerous abortions that were going on. I mean, that's another problem worldwide. When women don't want to be pregnant, they're going to take drastic steps not to be, and very dangerous steps. Because, and family planning is not available to most people. Not at all available to single people in my area, so.
What about sanitary conditions living in those thatched huts?
Well, they kept them very clean. Of course, insects can live in them, but I've never seen people that kept their whole living area as clean as the Fulbe people. It was, oh, part of the chores I forgot to mention, that every morning someone in the compound would sweep out each of the homes and then sweep all the dirt in between. It's really important to African women to sweep your dirt every morning. So if you think we are clean, we don't sweep our dirt outside. So they try to be, you know, really keep it clean. But of course it is dirt and there are insects.
They don't have septic tanks and things like that, do they?
No, latrines is another thing that one tries to promote. A lot of possible projects. I mean, that certainly suggests one. That's certainly part of better healthcare is when sanitation is better. I want to tell you about a few other projects that women are doing, which I think is really exciting. Women across Africa are gardening, and new cooperative gardens is what I mostly worked with. But ones, market gardens, ones that increase their disposable income. Another thing is called the Green Belt Movement in Kenya, and I've never visited this, I've only read about it, but I keep reading about it over and over, so it just must be fantastic. The leader of it, called Wangari Maathai, was a university professor. She has a PhD, but she decided she wanted to instead work with the women all across Kenya to increase the tree cover, because that's really it's women that will do it. Basically, that's it. It helps women, and it's women that will keep at it day after day. Men plant trees and with great fanfare, but it's the women who will water them day after day after day and make sure the goats stay out. So they started with the Women's Federation of Kenya, a movement where women are paid a certain sum, women's groups, for each tree seedling that they produce. They get about 7 cents. And so women's groups have started nurseries all across Kenya, and then of course women are given the trees. The funders, the donors. Yeah. I mean, the organization does.
That country or country?
Yeah, the donors of the project, which I think are first world donors for the most part. But it's an exciting way to use money because it goes right to the women rather than into you know, machines or bureaucrats or whatever. And traditionally, women knew the value of trees, and so she is especially working with women's groups. Here, let me just read out a little paragraph that she wrote here. I'm often asked, why did it take the women to start the Green Belt Movement, because it's being recognized so internationally as the greatest reforestation project around, and of course people are saying, well, can't we do it with men? I think that women in the National Federation of Women in Kenya were quite good at pursuing the idea, which for a long time bore little fruit. But patience is not a prerogative of women. Men could have done the same, similar, inspired, and sufficiently motivated. Perhaps the only thing that was characteristically women-like was our grouping and our rapid acceptance of the movement. And that's the one, the two most important things are that women are patient and keep at something, and that the women are well organized. There's a lot of examples of exciting projects that women are doing across Africa. As a matter of fact, almost all the examples that I can give you, women are grouping together, they're realizing that they are strong, and that in grouping together they can take back the economic power or take it. They maybe have never had it. And it's very exciting to me. I could tell you stories on and on about many of the strong women I knew. They're not shy in Senegal. Another woman that was very important to me was the mother of the family that I lived in. I had my own house, but I lived in the compound with a Senegalese family. And so they considered themselves to be my family, and I certainly did. The woman there was really the matriarch of this family, and she yelled at everybody, including her husband, and especially including me. She continually liked to tell me what to do. For example, guests were coming, and so I said, okay, I'm staying home today, I'm cooking for all these guests. So she just walks in my house. I didn't like it when other people walked in without knocking. But with her, I never minded. It was hopeless to try and change that anyway. And she'd say, what are you cooking for these guests? Oh, I can't believe you're cooking this. This is awful. You're doing this for your guests. You got to kill them a goat. And then she would tell me that I was wearing the wrong things. Look terrible today. And, why are you looking so awful today? So, but she organized her family. She was not afraid to step out of perhaps what has been the traditional role, and be the strong person that she is. So I found it just immensely exciting working with women. Problems are immense, as they are all over the world, but I think women are changing very slowly.
Are any of them elected to offices in the government?
Yes, Senegal is one of the best countries. They have a lot of women in the cabinet. There are some elected, but there are more women at that very high level appointed. Right now the Minister of Health is a woman, the Minister of Social Development, and anyway, there are about four women ministers in the Senegalese cabinet.
Who's the president of Senegal?
Abdou Diouf.
Don't hear read much about Senegal.
Isn't that right? I think we all find that it's very difficult in this country to read much about Senegal. And that's why it's easy for us to lump Africans together, and I think that's one of our major things. Really, all I can talk about from firsthand is Zaire, Senegal, and the other places that I've visited. But we need to recognize and celebrate the differences between the different countries, between the different ethnic groups, much as we do with Europe and with our ethnic differences.
Now, Senegal does not suffer from what much of Africa does, or they tell us that if they don't check the population, the growth would be much worse than it was in China before they checked it, and virtually impossible to feed everybody in 20 years.
Population growths are very alarming.
Even in Senegal?
Across Africa.
Yeah, I know.
They say that Africa is growing faster than any other continent in the history of the world.
Right.
Africa is growing much too fast. No matter what we think about the possibilities for long-term sustainability, what sure is, Africa cannot support that fast of a growth. In Kenya, the average number of children for women is 8. The population growth is 3.9%, fastest growing country in the world. That's Kenya. Tanzania, 3.5%. Senegal, 2.8%. Most of the African countries are grouped around 3%. Mm-hmm. It's much too fast. But the solution, everyone agrees on that, the solutions are what's not necessarily clear. But I think that the answer is through increased power for women, increased education for women, and increased alternatives so that women can choose. If they can choose to work, if they can choose to get recognition through other means than through having children, they will.
You've got such powerful forces against that. You've got tradition and you've got Islam.
Got the Roman Catholic Church. I don't know how strong they are in Senegal, but
do you see some other connections between women in Senegal and women here?
Oh, sure.
Good. I don't know if anyone makes any comments, but that's one of the things that I hope people see, that we're not so far away.
Is French the official language in Senegal, and what's the major religion in Kenya?
Muslim.
Mm-hmm. the major religion in Kenya or Senegal?
Senegal.
Well, no, is French the official language in Senegal?
Mm-hmm.
And what is the major religion in Kenya? You're telling me it's
Christianity. I think it's very highly Christian in Kenya. I couldn't give you percentages off the top of my head, but it's certainly very Christian.
Jane, you said there was a lot of sexual abuse of girls. Then are there a lot of illegitimate children?
There are a lot of illegitimate children.
And they're just part of the family then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not the terrible stigma it used to be. I mean, again, that's similar around the world. It used to be much more like here. It used to be, you know, those girls would be totally rejected from society, would be turned out of the house and would go who knows where. Now it's so common that they just stay in the town. But it's still tragic because those children, of course, will grow up knowing their story, knowing that they're called children who don't have a father. Well, of course, they do have a father. He's just not there.
Are their mothers marriageable? Do they
yes. Rarely, though, would they be the first wife. Uh-huh. They would be much more commonly be the second wife.
You see that.
Who's doing the abusing? Family members or what?
No, I'm talking about teachers, for example. Men in power, in powerful situations. Rich people. I mean, girls would probably, how it comes about usually is that girls are desperately in need of money, and it's done for money. Mm-hmm.
If you can afford it, the man can take up to four wives?
Right. Mm-hmm. That's what's permitted by Islam, which they say at the time of Muhammad was liberating for women because they used to be able to take as many as they wanted. So that was a great improvement for them.
Do the wives live together or do they have separate huts?
Well, they would always at least have separate huts. Often women prefer, if there's a lot of men that travel and they spend half their, say they're a merchant, they spend half their time in this village and half the time in the capital city buying merchandise. Well, they might have a wife there and a wife there, and that usually works out fairly well. But of course you split up all the resources.
Yeah.
That's
why
women can't stand that. There's a lot of stories about women being happy to have a second wife. And I think it's possible that same emotional connection isn't necessarily there in African traditional marriages, but it's the amount of money available for you and your children, which will be cut drastically when your husband takes another wife, who will of course have her own children. And that's the source of the rivalry. It's usually an economic thing.